Happy Easter.
A question for you. I have a friend who used to say, who is not a Christian, every year she would go to an Easter service and walk out at the end saying, but what does it mean? Why doesn't someone just tell me what it means? So let's just start with that. It's the first part, the only participatory component of the entire service, but all you're going to have to do is raise your hand. Has anyone here ever come to a point in your life where you thought that life as you knew it was over? That's it. Thank you. This morning in Jerusalem, at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, within the Idukala, the first flame was received, or lit, according to how you believe things like this happen. It is then distributed throughout Jerusalem and the West Bank, Israel and Gaza, to the Christian churches where it is allowed to pass, to the Palestinian Christian churches in the places of the people of Jesus. That happened this morning. Today we remember the church besieged by war and the Christians of Jerusalem, in Israel, the West Bank, and Gaza, who were being driven from their homeland. This week we have been reflecting, a number of us, on a passage from Job that Cole Arthur Riley uses in her meditation on Good Friday in a book called Black Liturgies. And it's just a gorgeous compendium of prayer, kind of like a BCP, but a very contemporary one. And she uses this verse for Friday. It's in our liturgies for Saturday, for Episcopalians, the Saturday before Easter. For there is hope for a tree, if it is cut down, that it will sprout again, and that its shoots will not cease, though its roots grow old in the earth, and its stump dies in the ground. Yet at the scent of water it will bud, and put forth branches like a young plant. That is from Job. It's Job 14. For there is hope for a tree. Now, the people that study these things tell us that Job is the first book of the Bible, and I know you're saying, but Winnie, that's Genesis. But it's Job, apparently, that is the oldest story we have in the Bible. It would have started in the oral tradition and then been written down at some point. And it's not at the beginning of the Bible, because, of course, in the beginning would make the most sense to start at the beginning with the beginning. I'm sure the lawyer said that really is the right way to start the story, right? But Job, the story of Job, is the oldest story we have. So what if we started with the great questions of our tradition, the part of the tradition we share with Jews and Muslims and other co-religionists from the Middle East now long gone? The question that Job is asking is, why is there suffering? Why do bad things happen? What does God have to do with our lives here on this earth, especially when we are struggling? That's the question that Job, the whole book, tries to answer. And they ask Job this question, his friends, and it's a question addressed, in a way, on this Easter morning. That's why we're here. The story of Job is that a prosperous and righteous man, Job, slowly loses everything in his life. Everything. His business, his herds, his family, his own health, his reputation. And his friends, ask him, why? Job, what did you do? What have you done that such horrible things keep happening to you? And Job refuses to say that he has done anything. He speaks with complete integrity the entire time, the entire book, saying, I don't know. He didn't make it up. He didn't make it fit. He just said, I don't know. He won't try to make the facts fit. He won't turn himself into something more problematic than he is. He doesn't understand. He actually defends himself with integrity. And then, when they say, well, who is this God of yours who is not clearly on your side, he defends God. He has some words with God in the book of Job. He has some problems with God. He speaks to God, but he defends his God. It is an intense little book, worth a read, and again, one of the oldest story in the Bible. So maybe our access to the oldest question, why is the world like this? Or maybe, what is the world like? How do we understand this? And we ask it again today. For Jesus was put to death on a tree in what we are told is a garbage dump on the outskirts of Jerusalem, accused by his fellow Jews, executed by the officers of the Roman Empire, buried and mourned by his fellow Jews, his disciples, women and men, resurrected, we read this morning, or rather, missing, declared free by a messenger angel, free and on his way to Galilee, Galilee, where he had first called his friends to come and follow him. Trees have stayed with us all through the stories of the Bible, the tree of new life in Job, the conundrum of nature, that at the scent of water generates life. The tree of life in the Garden of Eden, a garden situated in the place of the diaspora, the people writing from near the Garden of Eden would have been in Babylon. The Garden of Eden would have been closer to Babylon than Jerusalem. Babylon, where the learned of Israel write the Bible that we have, in exile. There was a garden once near here, the conquered Israelites are saying in that story. Near here, near Babylon, there was a tree here. Something about this place feeds us. A home before home, there was a tree. There was a tree that was cut down, and upon it, the Lord of life, the King of love, was executed in a human body much like ours. And when all hope was gone, the stump dead, like our Israel, the writers must have thought, defeated by Rome, the women find the tomb empty, and they see an angel. Other Marys hear the messenger voice of the angel, that from the very womb of the earth, love is liberated once again and traveling to that first place of call. The first question answered again with another puzzle for us to unravel. Where is God when we suffer? What happens to love here on earth? What is the last word? In Mark, it is an opening, like a gasp. He is not here. Was it the scent of the Sea of Galilee or the tears of a Mary? Is it the waters of baptism, the asperges from this basin? Where is God when we are lost? Where is the heart of love when the Bible is sold in schemes by scam artists, when our community identity as Christians is conflated in our politics with criminalizing medical care for women and children? Where is God when our loved ones cannot bear to hold on to this life any longer? Where is God when we wait for our insurance to cover the prescription or the treatment as our bodies are failing? Who is our God when children wait all weekend for Monday in school for food to eat? Where is God when our jobs end or our children struggle to keep up or our parents lose capacity? What is nature and time? What is the point of the circle of our lives? And when are the ways of this world of gold domes and people's houses and city councils, like the cutting down of a tree to its root, the restriction of life as it is meant to be, cynical and cold, as we choose more jail over school desks and free lunches, or just health care and affordable homes? Where is our God when the powers of this world bear down upon us? Job asks. This is the question. Far before we ask, how did this world as we know it come to be, we ask, where is our God? Jesus answers these questions for us in one way, God cutting through time and history to land among us as a person, the story says, simple and unassuming, in a place made poor by the most powerful empire of the time, Rome, calling the humble, crossing boundaries, Jesus telling a story of God from Jesus's view of the world. In Judea, in the first century, a carpenter's son, a Mary's son, a wandering observer, a teacher, and a healer, with words so powerful that he was hung on a tree to die. Like the witness to black thriving of so many black people in this land, in our own history, in America. What seemed to be the very last word, power, humiliation, and death. And yet it is written in Job that at the scent of life-giving water, life appears where death had been. The churn of those primordial waters, remember, always with us, bringing life again. And so let it be so with us, that at the scent of these waters, the scent of tears, of water fountains, and flowing streams, that sink you face every morning, that you and I remember what we were created for, what life springs in us, where we have been told there is only death or loss or humiliation, or just that the good thing is not the practical thing, near the sacrificed ones, sacrificed to someone's agenda or ego or the limits of our collective imagination. Let's take the last word this year. Let's take it in. Our neighbors deserve it. Let's not stand still for lives frittered away. No hate on our watch. No crucifixions. Only the testimony of love. For the immigrants that fill our potholes on bridges and operate on our hearts. For the kids who are defying this world to sort out who they are and how we can help them. For anyone who just wants to manage their own bodies and healthcare. For the right to access that healthcare, which we have the capacity to do here in this great state. For every broken heart that doesn't know how to keep living, real care. And for you left in death's wake, it's not your fault. And for you grieving, our hearts of love not afraid to be close with you. At the scent of water, maybe in a leaky tomb or the morning mist, Jesus, who had left this earth, returns. So strange, this story we have. Jesus returns and leaps back to life like the art on your program, like a sprout from the ground, a new leaf unfurling in your garden, mysterious and improbable, and steps out onto the earth to tell his grieving friends that death is not the end. No kind of death, social or political or physical or emotional or spiritual, no threat of death has dominion over us. At just the scent of water, new life emerges in creaky bones, and we are ready to struggle again. And what a glorious struggle it is, all of us together, friends. He is not here. He has gone ahead to remind you of why you first followed, where you first realized you loved him. So let us go quickly to see. Alleluia. Christ is risen.